You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Vulgar but fluent. You don't stammer when you swear.
No, bugger off!
Is that the best you can do?
Well, bloody bugger to you, you beastly bastard.
Oh, a public school prig could do better than that.
Shit. Shit, 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 shit. Shit, 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 shit.
Yes.
Shit.
Defecation flows trippingly from the tongue.
Because I'm angry.
Do you know the F word?
Fornication.
Oh, Bertie.
Fuck. 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 Fucking fuck. Fuck. Fucking bugger. Bugger, bugger, buggity, 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 fuck, fuck, ass.
Yes.
Balls, balls, fucking
you see,
shit,
not a
shit,
hesitation.
Fucking willy. Willy. Shit and fuck and tits.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Washman's got nards. Make love in a hammock. What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 127 for the 9th of April, 2011. I am David McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good, dude. We definitely earned our explicit tag on that one.
Didn't we just?
That is quite possibly the most offensive thing we have ever had on this show.
I think it's fantastic.
And it's fantastic.
And the reason for that, for those who haven't seen the film yet, that is from The King's Speech, which is the Academy Award winner for this year. And we have a story about the King's Speech coming up, which is the reason why we played that clip, and that clip in particular. So it's very important. There's your tease for later on. All right, so we will come back to why we're playing that. This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. And this week, we are going to review Zack Snyder's weird sexual fetish known as Sucker Punch, talk a little film news, and deliver a brand new list of five post-credit scenes worth waiting for. Now, I believe this was a request from Geek Betty. Going back a couple weeks ago. And I thought because the film Sucker Punch, and this is no spoilers, has bits in the end credits, I thought, well, okay, cool. This kind of suits the theme.
Yeah, all right. That, and there was nothing else worth
talking about. There was no other way to link this to anything. Okay, we have some feedback to start us off with today, though, so let's do that first. And first of all, we're going to say we have competition entries is what we have. But before we do competition entries, we do have a competition entry that is unfortunately disqualified because it is from Canada. And this is our very good friend Mike from Canada, who likes
who
to
I love.
Who I love too. And he likes to enter the competition, but of course he can't win because he's in Canada. But he also included some other information too. He says, hey, Josh, and then Dave. In response to Josh's obvious awesomeness, here are some names I came up with for people in favor of the Book of Josh. Okay, and he says, we could call the Book of Josh Philpott Heads, Philpott Apocalypse's Doom Patrol, Joshipals, which is my favorite, and Josh Philbert Knowers.
I like Joshipals.
I like Joshipals. I think that's great. Just throwing that out, see what comes back. All right, so if you guys have any other ideas that we can call the Book of Josh, there you go. He says, on a side note, I have yet to see Sucker Punch, but do you think they called it Sucker Punch because no one saw it coming?
We'll come back to that.
We'll come back to Sucker Punch in a minute. His favorite ghost movie. Every time someone says ghost, I'm not sure what that's in reference to, but he says, when someone says ghost, I always think of Bill Cosby, 1990 Ghost Dad. Side note, I custom wrote this line for Dave's speech patterns. I always think of Bill Cosby's 1990 Ghost Dad. I guess, yeah, okay. I didn't know I had such a distinct speech pattern.
You have, you say things. Like, yeah, anyway,
okay.
Keep going.
All right, I'll keep going. You can impress all your friends in hell. Okay. So that's Mike from Canada, but unfortunately you can't win, Mike, because you are in Canada. Now,
but don't ever stop.
Don't
writing.
Ever stop. They are wonderful. Now this is from Pete Young. He's in our chat room at the moment, actually. Charlie Fat, I believe.
There you go.
He says, "Hey guys, just thought I'd let you know that I have purchased The Collector and The Crazies on Blu-ray based on your recommendations. I haven't watched them yet, but I couldn't resist. Buy two, get one free at JB Hi-Fi."
So what was the other one?
Yeah, what was
you
the
only
third,
gave us
dude?
Two.
You didn't what tell us what was your film? Freebie.
Anyway.
Tell us what your freebie was. "If I can finish work in time tomorrow, I'll join the chat room for the first time." And he did.
And he did, and that's wonderful.
And welcome to our chat room. So, yes, that's fantastic. And the two for one.
Day of the Dead. Poor bastard.
Oh, well, you know, Day of the Dead. It's George A. Romero. I can go with that.
I don't know whether it's that one or the remake.
I think it's the original on sale. Anyway, I do love the JB buy two, get one free.
Oh, right. No, if it is the original, then yeah. Awesome. No,
the original is okay. It's not the best of the Dead films, but it's okay.
It's probably, in my opinion, the worst of them, but that's not a bad thing.
What?
I mean,
Land of the Dead?
No, out of the... There is no Land of the Dead.
Survival of the Dead? Diary of the Dead?
There is the Dead trilogy, and that's where it stopped.
They're all George A. Romero, man.
I don't care. George A.
Out
Romero
of the original,
lost his mind.
Out of the original trilogy, it is the weakest, yes.
Yes.
It is not the weakest of all of Romero's Dead films. Okay, yes, I do love that sale, and I want to take advantage of it every chance I get. This is why I stay away from JB, because every time I'm there, I go, you know, I could just buy two and get another one for free.
I could just spend $35.
Yeah, I could just spend $35, not a problem. Now, we do have some competition entries. Remember last week we said we were giving away this lovely pre-owned, pre-loved copy of Ghostbusters, and all you have to do is write in what is your favorite ghost story or ghost in a film, 25 words or less, and we
so
do
we'll
have
read out the three, and then we'll give up.
We got
the,
three entries, and we do have a winner. So let's have a look at these first, and we'll say, Pete again writes in and says, "Hi guys, I have been listening for quite some time, but always a couple of weeks behind. Well, I've caught up and can finally enter your competitions. My favorite ghost movie are the original, The Fog, and the shit your pants scary, The Orphanage. The remake of The Fog with Tom Wellings was just shit, no pants," which I think is wonderful. Hold on to that. We have one from Delta Knight, our researcher. Now, I don't know if we should disqualify Delta Knight straight off the bat because he's family.
No, let's see what he
But I will say that we have actually allowed you to enter. Okay. "Hi, Josh and Dave. My favorite ghost movie is Paranormal Activity. I think the movie has the best cross-section of environmental horror, jump scares, and realism. Sure, you might be a skeptic, but I've been watching a lot of Ghost Hunters, which use a lot of the same techniques as were used in the movie, and that made it feel that a little more real for me. Besides, it just simply scared the hell out of me. Geek on, Delta Knight." I think that's over 25 words.
But... We allow a lot because
we have a lot of latitude here. But we also have this one here, and this is from our good friend Tristan, and he says, "My favorite ghost movie has to be The Wraith.
Yeah.
Not many people have seen it, but I loved it just because it has the coolest car in it ever. Also, Charlie Sheen, subnote, winning, had some weird Afro thing happening in it too that just seemed to top it off. Cheers, Tristan." And I got to say that our winner this week is going to be Tristan for no other reason than he's rocking it old school with this reference. How many people out there have actually seen The Wraith?
Yeah.
Now, I have, and I was saying to Josh, he hasn't seen it. And I said, well, Josh, you have to watch The Wraith. It is cheesy 80s.
Now, as the one that always plays the heavy-handed one, I will explain the reasons for our
winning.
This
is straight from the Book of Josh, people.
Okay. Delta is not disqualified due to the fact that he is a member of a thing, but he is actually disqualified because it's actually about 70 words. So, unfortunately, Delta... a little bit shorter next time. And the only reason that I'm not allowing Pete to get into the competition is, unfortunately, dude, you messed up in one section, which is the fact that we asked for the best. By asking two, you unfortunately disqualified yourself. And I have to be harsh because there can only be one winner.
There can only be one.
I'm so glad because I was going to do that, but you managed to beat me to it. And also, mad props for Tristan because he
rocking
went
old school.
And
okay.
that would go obscure.
Although somebody would
always...
actually argue that The Fog is older school than The Wraith. But there's something about The Wraith in particular that is so epitomizes the 80s. And it has a rockin' car. All right. It does have a rockin' car. It's actually a pretty stupid movie, but it has a rockin' car.
Yeah.
So, Tristan, if you can send us your full name and full mailing address to feedback@geekactually.com, we will mail this copy of Ghostbusters out to you.
Yes. Okay. So, again, guys, don't forget you can always put in for the other ones, and there is a very high chance that we will pick you next time, but we have to be this harsh because, like we said, we can only have one winner.
That's right. There's only one DVD to give away here, so we got to make sure we try and figure out. And
we love you all, but we can only do
we
the best
make up
we
the
can.
Rules as we go along. So, you know. All right. We also have here an email from Mike who said, thought you should see this. Keep up the great work, and then put a link in. Now, I actually did catch this earlier in the week, and because of the nature of it, I wasn't going to put it in the show because it's kind of long and it's just music and it really doesn't fit the audio podcast very well. Mm-hmm. But I am going to play it because it is really interesting and really cool to have a look at. For our audio listeners, this will be abridged. We will cut this a little short because really it's just music. Okay. Mm-hmm. But for your video listeners, for your video watchers who are watching this live, I'll play this. The link is in our show notes. So for those who are listening and you want to watch the whole thing, you can. What this is a fan-made opening title sequence to X-Men First Class. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's really cool. It's kind of in that whole Saul Bass 60s style, you know, flat animations and stuff like that. And it's got this really neat take on the X-Men theme. It's the proper theme, but it's done with like cellos and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's got that kind of scratchy 60s sound. And have a look at it. It's a little long, but have a look at this and see what you think of this. Okay, how awesome is that?
Really cool.
So that is actually really clever. This is awful fan-made or otherwise. It's fan-made.
Mm.
It's a completely fan-made speculation onto what a 60s, because it's set in the 60s, a 60s X-Men movie would look like if it had been made in the 60s. So it's very cute. Okay, we've also had in our chat room, and by the way, for those who are listening to the audio podcast, we do go out live, and you can come and join our chat room at any time we record on Saturdays. The starting time varies. We have a Geek Actually show first, which starts around 12-ish. That goes for about an hour to an hour and a half, and then the film show follows that. So we always tweet out, follow me at David McVeigh, all one word, and you will always see the tweets as to when we're starting the film show. But it's roughly around the 2 o'clock mark. And yeah, it's very early Hitchcock. It's that whole Saul Bass. If you ever saw the remake of Cape Fear, which Josh is one of Josh's favorite films, that's a Saul Bass opening as well. And and it's done in the same style as, say, Catch Me If You Can and all that sort of stuff, you know? And Mad Men. Mad Men's got an opening like that, you know? So it's very clever. It's a little bit slow moving. It's not perfect. I'm not trying to say it's brilliant. It could pick up the pace a little bit here, but it's not bad. It's clever. It's a very clever take on it all. All right, let's move on to our section. We've given our giveaway away. We've done our feedback. We often talk about what we've been watching this week. Have you got anything interesting this week?
God, what have I been watching? I did them last week.
How about I jump in while you're thinking about it?
Yeah, go nuts.
Last night, my wife and I sat down and watched for the first time in a long time. It's actually one of her favorite films. It's a rom-com with Meg Ryan and Kevin Klein called French Kiss.
Yeah, seen it.
Directed by Lawrence Kasdan, who is a favorite of mine. And although not a perfect film, has some really funny stuff in it. And all I could think was, boy, watching it again, I think that's 95, 96 when that came out. I think 95, actually. And watching it going, boy, that was probably the last Meg Ryan. That was probably the last of that perky Meg Ryan before she went all serious and weird on us. And it's such a shame because she was so charming when she was. And Kevin Klein is awesome. And also, a lot of people don't realize that if you haven't seen the film or you haven't seen it in a long time, you may have forgotten that Jean Reno is the police officer in it, and he's fantastic as well. Mm. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed watching it again, and I'm glad she suggested it. It was her chick, her pick for movies last night.
It was her chick.
Her chick flick. I also watched Bourne Supremacy. If you notice from last week, I watched Bourne Identity again, and I was talking about how good it was. Bourne Supremacy this week, and I have to say, yeah, I still stand by the fact I think the first one is the best film, but it was I really enjoyed watching Supremacy.
Oh, dude, again. I got lucky and got a couple of bonuses at work recently, and was given the entire box set on Blu-ray, and I went through and did all of them in one go, and it's a really good trilogy. There is, like, you can sit down and watch all three of them and just be like, that was awesome. Like, your heart will still be pounding.
I think they are progressively, if you actually map them out, if you want to be really technical and go down and say, you know, what is the best one, what is the worst one, they really are 1, 2, 3.
Oh, really? I disagree. Mine would actually go 1, 3, 2.
Oh, really? I really like 2.
I actually think 2, again, in my opinion, 2 is weaker than 3. Because
I just thought 3 just took it just that. I thought his shaky cam just got a little bit out. There's one sequence in 3, though, that I love.
Yeah.
And I think it's my favorite sequence of the entire series, which is in the train station where he's literally dodging the cameras with walking through the crowd, and he knows exactly where each camera is and knows exactly how to get through the crowd.
Oh, dude, that, and also the fight scene between him and the dude in the bathroom.
Yeah, yeah. Just
awesome.
And the chase across the rooftops with him going through that window is pretty good as well.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
There's some good stuff in it, yes.
Yeah. 2, to me, like, is necessary, and it's a great... Like, again, you're comparing films that are really quite good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This is not like we're sitting there going, this is great, this is shit. This is... It's a very, very minor scale we're going down here. But I think the first one still, for me, works as the best... And it's something we had to talk about on Twitter. Me and some other people were talking about it. And Facebook, actually, in the fan page, is that sense of discovery in the first film because of the amnesia and him trying to learn who he is again, which makes it a really compelling film.
Yeah.
Once you've got that out of the way, and the second two films are more like straight on action films, they're not quite as solid as the first, just purely because there's that sense of discovery in the first that's really good. But a great series of films, all the same. Really, really did enjoy watching the second one. I watched the third one this weekend, and then that'll be done. That's another trilogy out of my hair. The movie Delta is The Bourne Supremacy, what we were talking about. Yeah. So, and the Bourne films in general. Oh, they're talking about Cape Fear still. They're still on Cape Fear. See, you start one conversation, and it just goes off into its own little tangent. What else did I watch this week? I rewatched Big Trouble in Little China.
Nice.
I got to say, that film just... Every time I watch it, I get something out of it. It is just one of those great films. It's not a great film.
No.
Don't get me wrong. It's actually not that great a film if you look at it with a critical eye. But it's so much damn fun that, you know, you just can't help but just enjoy yourself.
Yep.
So, yeah, that was another one I watched. Anything? Have you thought of one yet?
No, to be honest, dude, I've had a pretty light movie week because
You've been playing with your laptop.
I've been playing with my laptop and setting that up. Plus, I've also had to set up another computer for a friend. And then on top of that, I've worked 5 days, which is not usual for me. And then on top of that, I also have started a writing course. So
You're pretty flat chatter.
Very little time at the moment to do anything. So, yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's fair enough. We all have things that we have to do.
Yeah.
So, all right, we're going to move on to our film review. Now, before we do this film review, it's going to sound like Josh and I are getting mad at each other probably throughout this film review. We are not actually getting mad at each other. We both understand that film is completely subjective, and it is always going to be in the eye of the beholder. What we do, though, is we try and offer point and counterpoints for this show. And so we are still good friends at the end of this. All right. So,
maybe. Depends what you have to say.
The film for this week is, I say this because I think there is probably just a little bit less venom in me than there is in Josh over this movie. All right. All right. So the film this week is Sucker Punch, which is directed by Zack Snyder and written by Zack Snyder and Steve Shibuya, which is a name I love, by the way. Can I just tell you, I love this sort of Shibuya. Okay. Based on a wet dream. I'm sorry. I mean story by Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
It stars Emily Browning, who for us here, Australian. Okay. Does that mean anything? No, not really. Okay, stars Emily Browning, Abby Cornish, Jenna Malone, Vanessa Hudgens. Probably one of the most awkward surnames of any star. Hudgens.
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 It just doesn't roll.
No, it doesn't roll. Jamie Chung, Carla Gugino, Oscar Isaac, and Scott Glenn. Now, I've taken this synopsis because, quite frankly, I think the script is incomprehensible. So I've taken this synopsis from IMDb, from somebody who just lists themselves as anonymous on IMDb. So it says, a young girl is locked away in a mental asylum by her abusive stepfather, where she will undergo a lobotomy in 5 days' time. Faced with unimaginable odds, she retreats to a fantastical world in her imagination where she and four other female inmates... Excuse me. Just a little bit of vomit came up in my mouth there. So she retreats to a fantastical world in her imagination where she and four other female inmates at the asylum plot to escape the facility. The lines between reality and fantasy blur as Baby Doll and her four companions, as well as a mysterious guide, fight to retrieve the five items they need that will allow them to break free from their captors before it's too late. Yeah. All right, here's the trailer. Have a look at this. We'll come back and we'll discuss this out.
You are safe. It's all safe. What you're imagining right now, that place can be as real as any pain. Don't be afraid. You have all the weapons you need. Your fight for survival starts right now. I'm gonna escape from here. There's armed guards everywhere. If Blue finds out, we're dead. We're already dead.
This is your journey. If you succeed, it will set you free.
Okay, that was the shortest trailer I could find, by the way.
Went to the back room for a bit to ignore that trailer, so I didn't have to think about
it. I'm going to let you get the venom out.
Oh, God, thank you.
Go.
This is the worst film I've seen this year. This film is a disgusting display of someone's idea of what a concept of being in a world of torment is. It is... overdone. It is fantastical to the point where it is incomprehensible, as Dave said. The ideas in it, as best I can understand, because I actually sat in a room full of very intelligent people last night and asked the question what everyone thought of it, because people had been to press screenings and so on and so forth, and not one person could put a finger on what it was about. What I got out of it was insulting, to the point where I think that the way it portrays both female and male people, even though they are obviously dramatical, kind of like over-exaggerations, is not something you should be kind trying to put a point on. If this had been a fantastical story or a fictitious kind of a situation with no point or no actual meaning behind it, it wouldn't have had the effect that it did. But my problem is that it does, and that it tries to speak, and the problem with it speaking is it's speaking from somebody who shouldn't be discussing a situation he's never been in. And even if you've got this idea from someone else, it's not your right to make this movie, because you are upsetting people. And I have spoken to so many people that are like, I just didn't feel right when I left that film. And my problem is that I don't feel that what you got across works. You've tried to portray this image of the fact that these girls retreat into this world and that their world sees them as this kind of person, but then you have these weird things that I can't quite allow you to get away with, like the concept that when she dances, quote unquote, she escapes to a place and then when she returns, everybody's all sweaty and gross. Now, that can only be saying the only way, in my opinion, that she can get out of this situation is to seduce and fuck her way out. And I find that quite incredibly insulting. if you're going to put a point on it. If it had been a story that wasn't pointing fingers and saying, take this away with you and think about it, I wouldn't have cared. I would have gone along with the fact that this was a fake story. But then he tried to get into my head. Now, my other insult and reason for hating this film is, and I know, Dave, you're going to disagree with me, and I'm completely okay with
that. So far, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, the soundtrack to this is particularly hit strong to me because I have such a passion for music. The songs that they have picked are songs with a lot of power behind them and a lot of understanding. Now, they don't make sense for the scenes that they're in, and on top of that, they've taken songs that they may as well have picked Jimi Hendrix because they went with the Beatles, they fucked up the Pixies. Like, these are songs that have so much power because of what they have to say in them, and the way that they are portrayed is from a person that has been through those situations, and it's their own speech. Them doing versions and covers of this doesn't work because none of these people have done that. And the power for this lies in the fact that these artists...
I find that really interesting that you say that, though, when you actually defended on this show the soundtrack to Moulin Rouge, which has a lot of songs in it that are all cover mashups. And I got offended by that soundtrack, and you were saying, oh, but they're
No, but the soundtrack. You didn't like the movie. You never said that you didn't like it.
I hated the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
But I also didn't like the mashups in the film. You said as a standalone album, it's a fine album, right? You actually said that on the show. But that is just cover music.
But
you could argue this
No. Because the difference is these particular songs, like as an example, things like Where Is My Mind, which is a song about this sort of a situation, doesn't work to be a downbeat, sad song because the whole concept of the song is the fact that this guy is really lost.
Couldn't you argue that anything's up for reinterpretation, though?
Absolutely. I just thought it's insulting music. Like, I actually, because like you said, it's the cast doing the songs.
Yeah.
And the cast don't do it justice.
See, because I quite liked Emily Browning's version of Sweet Dreams. I thought her version...
Oh, yeah, that one was the only one that didn't bother me.
That downbeat that one, version but of that Sweet one Dreams felt, was awesome.
But that one felt very much like the original. Mm. So, like,
the original is an up-tempo number. They played it as this very sad...
But it's kind of like you could have just turned the faders down and actually just had the words playing over. Like, that's still kind of like, in essence, it almost sounded like them. I wouldn't have actually picked that one. But the rest of the songs did. And Salim was right beside me fuming as well. So,
I had no problem with the soundtrack. I actually quite liked the soundtrack. Yeah. For me, it's just a cover album. Yeah. And as far as a cover album is concerned, I thought, yeah, it's an okay cover album. I wasn't that emotionally invested or attached to the original songs to start with, though. So that may have been an issue.
Yeah. I quite literally will. I made a decision, though. Last night when I was talking to some people, because we had very different ideas on what it was trying to say. All of us thought that it was insulting and so on and so forth, just due to the group I was with. There were people...
It's a fetish sex fantasy.
Exactly. But one of the girls actually pointed out, she was like, do you think with some more time, if you rewatched it, it would... Maybe you might get something out of it if you tried to look in places you weren't looking due to your anger. And I was like, look, I'm not willing to do that. Honestly, I will never go see this film again. What I will say is if a director's cut comes out with a whole lot of scenes, because you and me both discussed the fact that it feels like this.
Well,
stuff is missing.
There is, in fact, we know already a director's cut coming.
Yeah.
Because Emily Browning herself actually went on a press junket recently and she was furious because she apparently had a sex scene in the film and it was cut by the MPAA. And now this is very ironic that she said this. She said that the trims to the sex scene made it look like a rape fantasy to the point where it looked like everybody was enjoying being abused.
Yeah.
And that got approved. And she said that her and Zach basically said they couldn't abide by the fact that what the MPAA wanted to cut it down to ended up looking like she was enjoying being raped rather than just being a sensuous sex scene. And so they cut the entire scene.
Yeah, exactly. And this is my problem, is that you get the feeling that this had a story to tell and it's not finished.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
There's a lot of scenes. And look, I mean, we will go into because once you've started, I'm sure we will roll into this, the problems we have scenes-wise with this film. I will rewatch this on DVD or Blu-ray when I have a full cut version done by Zack Snyder trying to tell his story. Hmm. Now, this is the first time he's written and directed a film, and with all of the things like that, I've heard that, and I've heard that there are a few explanations that need more clarification due to scenes that were cut out.
I am really hoping, as well, that the voiceover was added.
Yeah.
There is a voiceover that finishes the film. It's actually throughout the film, but in particular, it finishes the film. Now, we know that a few months ago, there was an article that came out basically saying that Warner Brothers was really unhappy with the third act of this film. They really didn't think it was solid, blah, blah, blah. And I'm really hoping that that voiceover was part of the imposition of Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
on a director's cut, he strips it.
Yeah.
Because I hated the voiceover.
Yeah, no. And the voiceover is actually the most insulting part of the film to me because...
It tries to make a message.
Well, and more importantly, when you have a really strong, really powerful director, and I'm sorry, but Zack Snyder, you're not that guy. And you do big action and you know, bizarre, fantastical scenes, but you are... Your direction
Zack Snyder
of your
is still
own...
an up-and-coming director.
Exactly.
And that's the problem is that he had a massive hit with his second film, which was 300. He had a critical darling with his third film, which was Watchmen. Made no money at the box office, but the critics just lavished praise upon him. So he really is in a situation where after three films, going into his fourth film, thinks he is God.
Yeah, and I really hope this film fails because I think the guy needs to re-examine himself. We will go into, again, more in a bit about that, but I have this huge issue with his filmmaking because that final scene where it points at the camera and goes, and this is about you, and I just looked at that and went, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like... You are at the point where you're like, as a dude, am I supposed to feel like I'm raping females or that I look down on females? And as a girl sitting in the audience, are they supposed to be going, we're all victims that dress up like little prissy tramps? And I was like, there are a bunch of people, some of which we know very closely, that may take some level of insult at that. Mm. And let's just say that it took a while to calm down one particular person on this subject. That we happen to know quite closely. And that's a terrible position. Did no one watch this in advance? Did no one sit down and go, this really needs a lot more in it before we should let it go?
Yeah. Look, as I said this to Josh when we came out of the cinema, as a film in its entirety, a beginning, a middle, and an end, telling a story with a narrative, the film is shocking.
Yeah, the fact that your narration... doesn't fix anything and makes it worse.
It's awful. It's just you sit there and watch it going, this is just an excruciating exercise in filmmaking. You sit there and go, they should never let Zack Snyder write his own stuff. You know, give him a script. Look, I'm one of those people. I actually really liked Watchmen.
Yeah.
I believe wholeheartedly that Watchmen movie is the best Watchmen movie we will get.
Mm.
All right? There's not going to be another one. They're not going to attempt it again. And I look at that and I go, I think he did a great job putting Watchmen on screen.
Yeah.
Could it have been better? Absolutely. You know, but I don't think it was terrible. Mm. I actually think it's it was a very entertaining film. I loved it. I saw it a couple of times at the cinema. I'm a huge Watchmen fan, and I liked it. Okay, I wasn't a big fan of Dawn of the Dead purely because I am a huge fan of George A. Romero's original, and I think Zack Snyder lost the message. I think it's a well-made film.
But
it's a well-made film.
My argument for that has always been that it's a different generation, and
it's still the same message, though.
Yeah, but to me, it doesn't. If you show someone that film now, the rampant commercialism is
more relevant today than it ever has been.
It's more apparent. It's more everywhere you go, but it's more of an accepted thing.
What it became for me, the remake of Dawn of the Dead became a generic zombie movie. That's all it is to me. And whereas the original Dawn of the Dead is special. You know, and so I look at the original Dawn of the Dead and I go, there's something there, and I've watched it so many times. There's depth to the original. Yes, the acting isn't particularly brilliant, and you know, it's rough around the edges, but it was 70s filmmaking and it was kind of, you know, bubblegum and baling wire, you know, but there's something special about that original. I think Zack Snyder's, with all of the running zombies and everything else and all the controversy that came about all that, I don't care about any of that. All I can think is, though, it's just such a generic film. It's a generic horror film. Okay, it's all right. But it's a generic horror
film. Oh, yeah. And look, it didn't get the cinema thing, and it didn't really get that good press. So, look, I mean, you know, again, I enjoyed it because it was like it had been a long time since I felt like we had seen a zombie movie that was just focusing on zombie movies as opposed to trying to tell a story.
Absolutely.
Because we were getting so we are so PC now, and we are so about trying to get
I think also
down.
Dawn of the Dead has really was really bad timing as well, because it wasn't that far off 28 Days Later, which is a far better zombie film.
Yep, absolutely.
Also, 300. I adored 300. 300 is war porn. I mean, you know, you just sit there and go, this is just awesome. It's complete style over substance. But so is Frank Miller's book.
Exactly.
You know?
And that was why it worked for me. And look, I mean, we've been into the Watchmen argument a thousand times before, and we can come out with different answers all we want. Reality is, I still agree with you. It's the best film we could have got out of Watchmen. His style became unfortunately apparent to me to the point where I actually am completely over what he does because he only has a select box of tricks. And
now,
that's
his
all
style
he uses.
Works for me 50% of the time. Yep. And now that brings us to this film, because, as I said, from a film point of view, beginning, middle, and end, the film sucks. Mm. As a film of individual scenes, forget all of the stuff in the Burlesque Club. It's all shit. Forget the stuff in the Insane Asylum. It's all shit. And that,
and blended together so badly, you won't be able to tell which one's which anyway.
Absolutely. And the reason for that is because the script is so muddled that he doesn't know what he's doing, and so the thing just falls apart. However, there are four fantasy sequences in it, which is what they play up heavily in the trailer, is those four fantasy sequences. And those four, out of those four fantasy sequences, I really liked three of them. And I know you didn't like them as much because of his style.
Oh, I can go a bit further than that.
And so forth. But I actually really enjoyed the first three. I thought the last one on the train was just a write-off. I thought it was just silly. But I liked the steampunk zombies. I liked the big samurai warriors. I thought he handled those well. And I could watch those again without much problem. You know, and I could sit down and watch those on Blu-ray and go, those are great sequences. And as you say, if there's a director's cut of this film, I'll watch again. The film didn't infuriate me to the point it did you. It didn't make me angry. I just sat there watching it going, why? You know, the whole film was a big why for me. Why did they allow this to get made? Why did they spend so much money on it? When they saw what was coming back, why did they market it so heavily? The whole film is a giant question mark. And you sit there and go, did they read this script, or did they just go, oh, Zach, you're a god, you can do anything? You know what I mean? Because if they read this script, if I had read this script, I would have said, what the fuck are you trying to say? You know? And I wouldn't have approved it. And they say we have got problems with the third act. Well, that would have been apparent in the script.
Yeah, you know? No.
There would have been problems in the script right from that early stage.
Yeah.
So I look at it and go, as pure style over substance, some of the sequences in it are fun to watch. And I know from a gamer point of view, you've got a much differing point of view on this. But for me, I look at it and go, even though it may have been copied from a game, even though it may have been that, I haven't seen that, and this was handled quite well, you know? And I quite like the visual style.
My problem actually lies, bar from the actual gun sequences in the trenches, bar that bit there, my problem with it is that I can't get into it because choreographing in action scenes is important to me. I have to feel like what I'm seeing is actually happening. And I know that may seem stupid based on the fact that we are talking incredibly fantastical things. But
incredibly stylized.
Yeah. But as an example, a lot of films will do this, but wire work is one thing. But when it feels like the person is floating through the air or that they're not really doing any of the movements, you lose me, because it's like, I don't believe the sequence. I don't believe she's jumping over a sword. I believe she's being pulled up on a green screen. That's what I see. And
in effect, though, aren't we just creating live action anime?
No, but that's fine if it was done like a live action anime. Anime has
like
a lot more power, and it has a lot, like, you can feel the sword go past. With this, I just felt like I was watching a girl jump up and down with some image behind it. Like, there was no weight to anything.
I got more out of it than that. So.
There was no weight to anything, and I felt that a lot of the scenes just didn't have any sort of good resolution. It's like, it visually was all right, and yes, me and a couple of the guys that we went through the thing kind of pointed out, we were like, wasn't really that just straight from this game, and wasn't that really just that exact scene? And it's funny, because a lot of the scenes play out almost exactly the same way. And I'm like, I don't like that you copy them, but I can get over that. What I didn't feel was, at the end of an action sequence like that, I should be blown away. I wasn't. I was just like, and here we go again. It's like, I had no feeling that I enjoyed any of this.
Like, and I had a different feeling to that. My feeling was I thought this is going to be a controversial saying, but I thought there was an artistry to some of those fantasy sequences.
Yeah.
And I actually enjoyed that. I enjoyed those moments. Yeah. Let's face it, there's something fun about watching girls in skimpy sailor outfits wielding samurai swords hitting steampunk zombies.
Again, I didn't feel it because it's like I felt like if I was to take any part of this attractive, I was kind of doing something wrong. Like, that was the film sold that. It was like,
there is an issue though, which says that if you were already disgusted by the story and everything else going on, that may have tainted your feelings of going into the fantasy.
But the whole point is that he's pointing the finger at you at the end of it for enjoying it. And it's like, I wasn't enjoying it, so I don't feel like this film has spoken to me, because I was like, I'm sorry, you're skimpy out. I'm sorry, but the skimpy outfits did nothing for me. I didn't find any of the girls attractive in that film. I just found them as, like, it was just so overdone. There was just too much on screen. And that was my big problem with it. It's like huge amounts of girls and guns and everything like this. I'm just like, I'm just overwhelmed.
Wow, that's very interesting.
Like, it's like, if you've got one person doing a whole bunch of fighting or something like that, I could understand. But it's like, all these girls in skimpy outfits in a thing, doing something bizarre. It's just like, I'm like, dude, you've tried to put too much into this.
It was like
watching
a Sailor Moon cartoon for me.
No, but
you've
lost, in essence, what you were trying to accomplish. It's like, the scene no longer has any weight for me because there's just too much going on. It's like, you've tried to sell me the most amazing thing you possibly can.
Once again, though, you just said they've lost what they tried to accomplish. I think they lost that from frame one of this film.
And it's difficult because it's like, how do you fairly judge this film? Because it was a mess the second you walked in. It's like, from
there. I completely agree. See, this is what I think. I think the long and the short of this is, we are on the same page as saying the film has got a really awkward message at the best of times, if not leading into completely offensive message.
You know, that you've said it really well just there, though, Dave, because it's like, realistically, you've tackled a really delicate subject matter. With a sledgehammer. And you did that and then tried to expect to get something out of people. And it's like, you have to understand, you're selling a concept, A, not everyone's going to understand. Two, not everyone's going to feel comfortable with. And three, you're not explaining anything, so it's just confronting.
And there were ways around this in this script.
Absolutely.
If he had actually stripped away... Now, this is a minor spoiler. It's not really a spoiler. It's a minor spoiler, which is that this is actually two levels deep of fantasy.
Three, if you count the fantastical.
Like, the fantastical. I was like thinking there's the pulling up at the asylum at the beginning. That's supposed to be quote-unquote reality.
Yeah.
Then there's going into there's the asylum. Mm. Then she escapes the asylum by going into this fantasy world, which is like a burlesque club / brothel, which she then escapes by going into this fantastic world where she fights. There's three levels.
Yeah.
Well, no, two levels of fantasy. One level of reality, two levels. So it's three deep, though, all right? Mm. So right there, it's muddled. Yeah. All right. And the first thing you could have done to help this film in a minor way is shed one level of fantasy. Get rid of the burlesque club / brothel and play it out in the mental institution.
Yeah.
Right there, you would have had a very different message.
Or maybe perhaps even just make the girls thinking that they are, but there is no fantastical world there. It's like, just make them make them feel like they're playing it out. Like, just have them doing their hair in shitty, bad clothes with the hair brushing and stuff like that. Maybe something like that.
I don't know. The point is that there is ways to fix this. There's very simple ways to fix this. Mm. But Zack Snyder decided to be very clever, and that was his biggest... That's his biggest failing, is he tried to be clever, and I don't think he's clever.
No.
He's not clever enough for this script, anyway.
And I'm sorry, but I'm actually going to say that I am now putting him... Because of this film and the Owl film, I am going to put you back into Michael Bay class. There you go. You are officially just a bad action director.
Who lucked out. Yeah.
You have lost whatever edge I ever was going to give you.
Yeah.
You can
handle
visuals on screen.
People have the opportunity to come out of that basket. Michael Bay has stepped out once in a while, you know, and then they end up falling back into it again.
Michael Bay has stepped out of the
Transformers 1 was great.
Yeah, I don't think that
Bad Boys was great. Armageddon was good fun.
Yeah, but you know? I don't know whether I'd say he stepped out.
He steps out of the bad basket, makes something good, and then
he steps out of the bad basket and into the good action.
He goes, I'm making films. So we give him a pass and we say, okay, you seem to have improved. He steps out, gives us the island. Back in you go.
We hit him with a newspaper on the nose and put him back in the bad
basket. It's like the sin bin. It's like, yep. Get back in the bin, all right? And at the moment, Zack Snyder... You crawled out of there for a while, and now you're back in there again.
You had the owls, and we kind of forgave you because you got a little bit too much money.
I hold in my hand the last nail of your professional career.
Yep.
I have a hammer in this hand, and Superman is going to make me put this nail in.
We will put you to sleep. We will lock
Superman
you in that box.
If Superman is fucked, I'm putting this nail in your coffin.
That's it.
In your professional coffin. It's gone. In fact, I remember that quote, and the reason why I say that is because Tobe Hooper, director of the esteemed Life Force, which we all know I love so much. It's so bad. When he made Invaders from Mars, there was actually a Sydney reviewer who actually said, this film marks the last nail in his professional coffin. And I just thought that is such a beautiful quote. And Zach, you are the modern Tobe Hooper at this point. All right. So watch yourself. All right. Let's wrap this up so we can get into news. Josh, I think we know your answer to this.
Don't go it. Don't see it. Don't buy it on DVD. Until this film gets a pass from me a second time round, and I'm not trying to play the elitist here, I am just saying this film is insulting, it is disgusting, it is degrading, and its message is lost through a sea of bad animation and bad story points.
And on the counterpoint to that, I'm going to say the film is crap. It's not good. Do not pay cinema dollars in any way, shape, or form. However, this film might be worth a rental on DVD to have a look at those fantasy sequences and make up your own mind. Skip the rest of it, though. Yep. Fast forward through the rest of the film. Just look for the fantasy stuff. Have a look at those because they are actually quite well done, in my opinion. And I differ from Josh. The soundtrack is actually worth a listen. It's actually an interesting album. I've got the album. We're going to play a little bit of that going out. We've got the Sweet Dreams for our end credits.
Sweet, cool.
So I actually didn't mind the album as well. But by all means, this film, look, it didn't make me as furious or as angry as Josh. It's just, it is so much mediocre crap with such a mixed message. And Zack Snyder, you should be ashamed of yourself. You should get in writers. Is all I can say.
He should have gotten a second writer.
It could have been based on your story or your wet dream, as the case might be. And you did bring in a co-writer, but you shouldn't have been in the screenwriting process. Mm. You should have said, here's my story, give it to writers, and let them figure out how to make it work.
I don't even know whether that would have helped. Yep, okay.
All right, and yes, you already answered. Somebody in our chat room asked, didn't he do the Owl movie?
Yes,
the Legend of the Guardians, Owls of Gahul, which I have still avoided up until this point.
I think it's best you just do. Like, it's visually stunning. If you could watch it with a mute button on.
Well, Animal Logic's CG is supposed to be amazing.
Oh, dude, and their studio deserves the credit, and I hope people that watch it will take that away.
Hmm.
But it's kind of like everything else just doesn't work.
It's such a shame. He showed such potential as a filmmaker. He really did. Anyway, all right, let's move on. We've got some news that we want to cover today. And my iPad's gone to sleep during that discussion. So let's wake it up again and basically say, in our Entertainment Buzz section, it's funny we talked about Bourne during the what we've been watching segment, because they're looking for a new actor for the new Bourne film. Bourne, what's the thing called again? Bourne...
it's like Supremacy. It's something like Bourne.
Yeah, give me a second. I can tell you exactly what it's called. Basically, everybody from the original film has stepped out, and they're doing another Bourne film. And it's not a reboot. It is actually a sequel, and it is a new character. So it's not actually Bourne. It's kind of like working around the sidelines of the Bourne story. Which I'm not sure if it's going to work or not. It is actually here somewhere. Where is it? It's Bourne. Oh, I don't care. Anyway, Tony Gilroy is actually working on it. And they're looking for their lead actor. And at the moment, apparently, one of the frontrunners for this is Jeremy Renner.
Who I am totally down with.
However, I find it very odd because isn't he in the new Mission Impossible film? So it's like going from one spy franchise to the next at this point.
Well, then he'll have a lot of practice.
Does our chat remember what the new Bourne film's called? I can't find its name. Bourne Legacy.
That's it, Legacy.
Bourne Legacy.
I don't know why I thought Supremacy.
Anyway, so yeah, it's not actually Jason Bourne this time. It's another spy, basically. I think it's a sideline story. I think it's going on during the events of Bourne. is my remembrance
maybe
of what the plot is.
Dude, again, I don't care. The Bourne world is worth a second look.
Yeah, I like the Bourne world. I like Tony Gilroy.
The great thing about it is once you close off a series, once you get a trilogy, anything that you do around that will never bother fans because it's like they have their set.
And that's not true. No, because no. How many people sit there and go, Star Wars The Phantom Menace has destroyed my entire feelings on the original trilogy. He's destroyed it for me.
Then you need to grow the fuck up. Just put it back. Don't buy it like the rest of us did. And we all move on with our lives. We pretend it never happened.
People get so hung up on this stuff.
But the thing is, once you have the trilogy can't be touched. If you've got a 1, 2, and a 3, and 3 ends up sucking, a la something like, say, X-Men.
Mini films,
yeah,
trilogies.
But what I'm saying is the trilogy isn't safe. But if you get 3 movies that work, you can lock that off as the series, and anything else that you do, you can take or not take.
Mm.
But if you fuck up a trilogy before it's finished, that's another story.
Think about it. Karate Kid 3, Die Hard 3, Lethal Weapon 3, these are all mediocre thirds.
No, absolutely, and I totally agree. What I'm saying is if you can get the trilogy and lock it down, you've got a trilogy box set, and you can have that on your thing, and you can watch your box set, and then everything else that happens,
then
you can ignore.
And then Fox comes along and decides to call something like the X-Men films the quadrilogy and throw in Wolverine into it.
Well,
idiots.
And like I'm saying, that's not a trilogy situation, so it doesn't apply. No, it's like you fucked up the trilogy situation. If you do Bournes and you do the three Bournes are one locked off series.
Yeah. Look, I agree with you. I am in the school.
I think hit 3, get a solid 3, then reboot it.
But see, I'm even more than that. I don't think any film will ever take away the power of the original film. Mm. I just look at it and go, if a film... Look, I come down to that quote from about Euro Disneyland, when Michael Eisner got up in front of the French when they were all... The French were up in arms about Euro Disneyland, and they were basically saying, oh, you're going to destroy our culture. And Michael Eisner actually got up in front on a press conference and said, if a big American mouse can destroy your culture wasn't very strong to start with.
Yeah.
Right? And it's such a great quote, because you sit there and go, okay, he's an asshole for saying it, but it's a great quote. And you sit there and say, if your love for the original Star Wars films can be damaged by the new trilogy, then your love wasn't particularly strong.
Yeah,
you know?
And I'm sorry, like, as an example, that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, though, because you have that locked off through trilogy, right? And I don't like the I get nothing out of watching the new ones. I've watched them more than once, right? Mm. They just don't do anything for me. They just fall flat.
Which films are we talking about? Oh,
we're talking
Star
about
Wars,
the new
yeah.
three, right? But then again, you get all this other great fan stuff, like the first Force Unleashed. You've got KOTOR,
the Clone Wars cartoon series.
The Clone
is
Wars cartoon series. It's like once the three are locked off, you've got a series to work from, and it's like even if you fuck it up once, then you just ignore that and you go to another
and
section.
So many people bag it on. Look, the new trilogy 1, 2, and 3. There is some good stuff in there. There's some great lightsaber moments, and there's great special effects. Some of the best special effects committed to film, because it's the best special effects company. It's the A-team doing exactly what they were built to do, you know? So there is some great stuff. Is it as good as the original films? Nowhere near it.
My problem is, Dave, that you can throw as nice, many fantastical, you know, things on and stuff like this. You can do all that sort of stuff for me, but reality is, if I have to wade through a sea of shit to get to it, then I'm not going to enjoy it.
See, I quite enjoy them. But then again, I have an 11-year-old
yep.
who adores them. And so I can watch them through his eyes.
Yep.
You know, and I
wonderful.
Can sit, and I can watch
go
it through his eyes.
Go take your 10-year-old eyes and go sit down on your couch and watch the movies. I don't give a shit.
I just have to state, and this is going to be very controversial, but I'm going to state it for the record and say that Return of the Jedi is actually not a very good film. It's not a very
yeah,
good film.
Yeah, all right.
It's a Muppet film, all right? It's a Muppet film with cute teddy bears, all right? It's not a great film. It's got good moments, and it's a nice finish to the trilogy, but it's not a great film.
But I still enjoy it as
however,
a film.
Empire Strikes Back is yeah. a masterpiece.
I still enjoy sitting through it, and that's the difference.
Hmm. And I will I will watch all of them. It's Star Wars, yeah. man. What's not the likes? Lightsabers and lights and lasers and spaceships.
And I was in New Zealand at the time, so my opinion is unabashed because I didn't watch any news after I watched it. So it's like my opinion was my own because at the time I went and saw the film and then went away on holiday. So it's like I missed it until I came back and everybody was really angry. And I was like, oh, well, I just thought it was crap. But now apparently it's a worldwide phenomenon.
But I am in the same camp as everybody else. I think Jar Jar Binks should have been... excised from the
film. I think that bit where he got his tongue stuck in the thing, his whole head should have gone.
Absolutely. All right, we got sidetracked. Anyway, my opinion is
we're doing a show.
My opinion is that if you've got a great film, it doesn't matter what comes after it. That film will still be great. It's like Die Hard. I think Die Hard is a masterpiece of action. I don't think Die Hard 2 is a particularly good film. I think Die Hard 3 is a mediocre film, and I didn't mind Die Hard, but none of that takes away from the fact that I can watch Die Hard 1 over and over and over and over again and get something out of it every single time I watch it. I love Die Hard 1. You know, and it's like, it doesn't matter. They could make the worst Die Hard film ever, put it in cinemas. They could make Die Hard meet Sucker Punch, and we would all sit there and go, this piece thing is reeks as a piece of crap, and we should burn it on a pyre.
I want to see that film, because all that's going to happen in that film is that the girls from Sucker Punch are going to get a bullet through the head from one of the toughest motherfuckers ever made.
But the point is that that will not affect my viewing of the original Die Hard.
Okay.
You know? And that's my point, is that these films, it's like, you know, the people sitting there go, oh, you know, it's terrible, it's affected me. It's like, X-Men 3 destroys the entire trilogy. No, X-Men 1 and 2 are still good films. Leave them alone. You know what I mean? X-Men 3 is just a shit film. Don't watch that one. Okay, Roland Emmerich, speaking of shit films. Roland Emmerich is not destroying the world in his new film, which is...
Is it called Anonymous?
It is called Anonymous.
Oh.
And
is it going to be another film, anything like Unknown?
No. In fact, I am actually really intrigued to see this. The concept of Anonymous is that William Shakespeare actually did not write any of the plays. Somebody else did, and he wasn't allowed to use his name. And so Shakespeare took credit for it. So have a look at this and tell me what you think. This is the trailer for Anonymous.
Okay.
We all know William Shakespeare, the most famous author of all time, writer of 37 plays, 154 sonnets, several epic poems, and why we are here today. But what if I told you Shakespeare never wrote a single word?
Your poems or your plays will ever carry your name.
Promise me you'll keep our secret safe.
So an intriguing idea.
Yeah, got to say that even hits with me, that one does.
And all I can think is, wow, is Roland Emmerich growing up?
No, I doubt it.
So
I said it was intriguing. I did say it was going to be good.
But then again, we do forget that Roland Emmerich also made The Patriot. So he's gone into historical drama before. This is...
And yeah, that was a great film.
It wasn't great, but, you know, I noticed your words of sarcasm. It's all right.
really? I didn't think that dripped hard enough off the mic.
James Cameron declares the future of cinema.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, moving on. No.
No, I'm done with that.
James Cameron was recently at, what's it called? CinemaCon. What used to be called.
Honestly, the first thing that came to mind was actually just again.
Again. Well, exactly. That's exactly how I felt. CinemaCon is, used to be called Show West. It's now, they've renamed it. And he came out on stage and he talked about where he thinks the future. And James Cameron has actually talked about this before. He doesn't think, he says, you know, we've mastered the whole 3D thing and he loves all that and all that sort of stuff is going great. What he wants to see is faster frame rates. He said, we've been using 24 frames on film for 100 years. Mm. And basically, we're at a stage now where we have the technology that we can actually record films at, say, 60 frames a second, which will get rid of any residual flicker and so forth that is left on a cinema screen and create absolutely sharp, high-definition image. It's a great idea. The only problem is, of course, that 60 frames a second means you've got all those extra frames to render and so forth when you're actually making films. And so it's a lot of work involved in making this all work. Cinemas have to be retrofitted back to 60 frames if they aren't equipped, you know. And, of course, standard film is not going to like 60 frames.
But like,
it's digital cinema, it is a very strong possibility.
Yeah, no, look, I totally agree with them. And I mean, like, it is, I recently had the pleasure of speaking with someone who will remain completely anonymous, but someone who's actually working with 3D cameras and making a film with 3D cameras right now. And even that, it's like the programs themselves, they're, you know, the things that we're using to create all this sort of stuff is intense and really, really good. But apparently, like any software, the first incarnations are buggy as hell. Yeah. So it's like, look, this isn't beyond us. It's just you have to have someone like Cameron to do it. It's like if Cameron stands up and says, let's do 60 frames a second, reality is you just go, yeah, cool, let's do it.
Yep.
And we just wait because it's not going to happen until he starts doing it.
Well, the most interesting part of all of this is it looks like somebody may have actually taken the lead on this already because Peter Jackson is shooting The Hobbit. In not 60 frames, he's shooting at 48 frames per second. Now, Cameron actually said there are two standards. One would be around 48 frames, one would be about 60 frames. The question would be which way would the industry go on this? But either way, 48 frames is still doubling the frame rate.
Oh, dude, that's going to be a beautiful film.
So it's shot on the Epic Reds in native 3D at 48 frames.
The
Hobbit is going to look gorgeous. So
I think we might need a private screening of this because I think I'm going to make a mess.
So it looks like the James Cameron's future may be now. So
he doesn't waste time. He's like, it's like Avatar. He's like, I've been doing this for 3 years, but here's the future now. Yeah, go
right now. You're in.
Next week,
you're done.
It's in cinemas.
Well, speaking of the future of cinema, I think we may have just seen the end of it. Remember last week we talked about the Governator cartoon?
Oh, yeah.
Well, a trailer surfaced this week. That's how fast we've moved. We also found out that Stan Lee is actually behind helping create this.
I like the, I got to say, I like the visuals to it. That's all I'm saying.
And I have it here. Now, I'm not going to play the whole trailer. It is a very long trailer, and the second half is all music. And images, and that's really boring after a while. So I'm only going to play the first 40 seconds or so of it, so if it cuts off, you know why it's cut off. Yeah. But here is a trailer for Arnold Schwarzenegger in the new animated series, The Governator.
It has been an honor to have served you for these past 8 years, but now I must say goodbye.
Governor, will you be returning to your life as a movie star?
No, Larry. I've had a great career, as you know, as a bodybuilder, as an actor, and as a politician. Now I'm going to be a private citizen once again. I won't be back.
This just in, robots rampaging through San Francisco.
Have we all had enough?
It's a kid's cartoon.
And reason why I say it could be the end of cinema is because, guess what? It's also going to get a 3D theatrical release.
Fuck. Dude, seriously, if I was 12, this would probably be amazing. And
It looks like Captain Power or the Planet Rangers.
It does. But that's the thing. It's like, I'm sure that if I was that age group, I'd probably be like, this is freaking awesome. We got a dude in a big suit. Like, you wouldn't care about the fact that he was a governor. The thing that I think is missing from this, the thing that could have sold it to everyone, was humor.
Yeah, well, they tried, I think, and it just doesn't work. I don't know.
Where's the humor? There's no humor in that.
They put Larry King in it.
That's not... What's wrong with you? How is that? No.
I'm sorry, I just look at I'm that thinking, and I just sit there
I look
and go...
at that and say, if you had got that, and then you had had the scriptwriters from Boondocks.
Do you know all I see in that is I see He-Man. I'll get you, Skeletor.
No, but that's what I'm saying. It's like if you had to put him with a real good team of people that could really give that shit. Like really just be like, this series is both really stupid, but also we're totally going to play on that. And just have him, like, in the White House talking to people, and then, like, afterwards gets a suit on and then goes stalks the dude that fucked him over in the White House. Like, shit like that would have been hilarious.
In our chat room, Callison has said, I hope all his little helpers have the same accent he does, because that would be great. Those little helpers are actually voiced by his real kids.
You see, that's what happens when you give people power.
Captain Planet 2. Thank you, Charlie.
I love that he has the ring. The ring is just what sets it off. You're like, oh, really? We had to have the ring?
And then it goes into the whole thing where he fights monsters, and at the end, of course, he goes, I'm back, you know, or I'll be back, or
but that's the problem. It's like you play. It's crap. It could have been a good series. It had that. There are ways you could have made that funny. Was the only way you could have made that work.
If you insist. I agree with you. If they made it funny, and if they made it a nighttime series.
Yeah.
For adults.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
No, absolutely.
Maybe that, and you get the animating team who do the DC stuff to quality animation on it, you know? It might have. But it looks like bad Marvel animated feature film. It looks cheap and nasty. It has no humor. I don't know. The film looks like crap. However, speaking of crap, no, this isn't. I'm not actually speaking of crap. Let's segue, because I'll skip a story and we'll come back to the other one. Because speaking of crap. Will Smith and Jaden Smith.
Oh, dude, what the hell? I read the line in your post. I read the article. I'm just like, what?
Peek my earphones out. Yeah, okay, for those who haven't read it yet, we've got it up on Geek, actually. Jaden and Will Smith are teaming up with M. Night Shyamalan for a new untitled sci-fi film. And all I could think is, wow. And how does M. Night Shyamalan keep getting these budgets? How does he talk people into this stuff? What was the last film he... Okay, no, I shouldn't say that, because I know Last Airbender actually made money in the long run. It actually did a couple $100 million and worldwide, and there'll probably be another one. But the point is, the film was crap. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. I think that it's just like...
And the only reason that made money was because it was Last Airbender. Hmm. What was the last M. Night Shyamalan film from an original idea, not based on
None,
Last Airbender?
Ever.
What was the last one that actually made ever. Money?
Oh, right, money.
That was successful.
Oh.
I think you have to go back to
The Village. You know what, dude? Like, M. Night Shyamalan to me is like the Cannon Group. Like, that's what he is.
No, because the Cannon Group were entertaining.
No, but that's the thing. I actually, like, I look back on it, and I actually thought about it, and I rewatched the trailer because I was on iTunes on my little Apple TV, and I rewatched the trailer to The Last Airbender, and I'm like, I'm going to watch that again, just so that I can tear the shit out of it. And I was like, when I did that, I stopped, and I was like, good God, he's going to be this generation's that. I'm going to get what I got out of all things like Flash Gordon, which were just, I'm going to sit there and be like, this is so bad. I love it.
Do you know why it won't be quite Flash Gordon? Because he doesn't have camp.
No, but like...
He plays it so seriously.
No, but that in essence is its charm. That's what I've realized. Its charm is the fact that he plays it so straight. It's like a good comedian. It's like everything's done so straight. You're like... How did he get everyone to do this? It's a masterpiece, and I wrote up that article about that, and I still stick by that. He is so bad that he's amazing.
And he seems to have been able to talk the Smiths.
And I can't wait, because I'm going to sit there in the cinema and go, oh man, this is going to be terrible.
And I said in my article, Will Smith, Jaden Smith, message to you guys,
run,
prepare... Prepare for failure, okay?
This is it.
Prepare for failure.
I hope they can play it as straight as everyone else.
And I feel sorry for Jaden, actually, you know, because he was awful in The Day the Earth Stood Still. Awful, right? Hmm. And he redeemed himself because, as we've said in the show, the Karate Kid remake, stupid name, should have been called The Kung Fu Kid, but The Karate Kid remake was actually not as bad as we thought it was going to be, and he's actually pretty good in it. And now to turn around and do this, it's like you could chart it on a chart. It just kind of goes up, down. You know, it's like straight up, straight down. So yes, I do not hold any hope for this film whatsoever. All right, in the words of the Madagascar Penguins, You didn't see anything. All right. For you, I haven't seen the film, so I can't comment, but Black Dynamite is being turned into an animated series on Adult Swim.
Dude, and speaking of just perfect situations, the team that's on that, it's like that you have the writers.
It's the Afro Samurai guys, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's the visual department. The series is being scripted by the dudes that did The Boondocks,
which is
one of the funniest series done by black people, because the whole thing about it is they play on themselves, and the whole thing is they've got enough characters to balance the obvious racist humor. So they've got the white people, but then the black people make fun of themselves. So it's like, it doesn't matter who's watching it. You can show it to middleheads. They will still find it hilarious because anyone can get the humor in it.
Oh, that sounds good.
Because it's like, as an example, season 3 of Boondocks, please go watch it if you haven't. Episode 1 is about Obama, and it's played from everyone's side, and it's hilarious. And to make it even better, it's a fake documentary voiced by and done by Werner Herzog. So it is amazing, and it is so well done, and it takes the piss out of everything that went wrong with that campaign, and the fact that you've got Jay-Z, who is just a guy that has got a lot of money out of a rap career, standing up in front of these real politicians and trying to make sense. And it's hilarious. And this team is going to make a brilliant job of this. I am so excited for this series because it's like Archer. It's just the kind of series that you know will have the best and worst kind of humor you could possibly expect. And it will take the piss out of itself perfectly.
I gotta say, speaking of Archer, while we're on that subject, I don't think Archer season 2 is as solid as Archer season
1. I haven't seen it yet. I've been waiting till the end of the series.
I've watched about the first 3 episodes of season 2, and it's still funny. Don't get me wrong. It's still funny. It's still very... But it's just, it hasn't quite hit the mark yet.
Yeah.
Archer season 1 is so tight.
I'm wondering, though, whether it's going to be one of those situations where it'll have a lot of backtracking humor.
Because that's
what a lot of people have been hinting towards.
I'm still enjoying it, but it's just not as solid as the first season.
Yeah, I have watched that series.
I love Archer. Archer's right. If you haven't seen Archer yet, it's on video here now.
That's not my
go
mouse.
Out and grab
That's
the
my mouse.
Go out and grab season 1 of Archer and have a look. It's very politically incorrect. Speaking of politically incorrect, we opened with the clip from The King's Speech.
Right.
Now, the reason we opened with that clip in particular is because the Weinstein Group decided in their esteemed wisdom, and I was just so happy to hear this. I'm so happy to hear this news. They decided, after it got nominated for all the Oscars and everything else, that they were...
They're going to do a sequel.
No, wait, hear me out. They were afraid that they were missing some of the market. So they, with the blessing of the director, cut it to a PG rating and cut out the profanity so that they could get a more mass market audience in the United States. Now, the film went on to win Best Picture and everything else. And then just recently, this new cut version has hit cinemas, right? So the version that won the Oscar was the R version.
Yeah.
Okay? The swearing in it is not offensive. The swearing in it is for a point. There is a reason for it. Now, I am so gratified to hear that the new PG-13 cut version has bombed at the box office.
Yeah.
So I am so glad to hear this, and I am so proud of everybody who avoided going to see it.
Oh, Weinsteins, you are the absolute epitome of failing to get the point.
Absolutely.
Your entire company is founded on do exactly what everybody doesn't think is a good idea.
Damn straight. And all I could sit there and go is, you really, if you thought the swearing in the King's Speech was offensive at all, you missed the point.
Yeah.
You missed the point. It's not offensive, and there was no reason. I would let Little Geek watch King's Speech in a heartbeat.
Yep.
He's heard the word fuck before. It's not going to hurt him, you know?
He's going to giggle his little ass off.
Yeah, absolutely, which was what we did.
Exactly. It is. It's that child mentality. It's like when you're a 10-year-old and you say the F word, and you're just like, I just said it. I said the F word. And that is the feeling he's getting.
Because
that
he's not allowed to say words like that. He's the king, you know?
Exactly. And it's just, it's that complete over-exaggeration that you do when you're not allowed to do something. You're just like, oh, I'm being so naughty
and
right now.
I love that punchline. Tits.
Tits. No, and tits.
And tits. All right, we have one more piece of news, and then we're going to do our list of 5 and get out of here. But this piece of news is a trailer-related piece of news. And now, I am fascinated by this. All right? The Hangover 2 trailer hit the internet last week. This is the full trailer now. Okay, not the teaser that was shown originally. So this actually shows the story. It's pretty much the same story as the first film. They wake up after a boozy night. They've lost somebody, not the same guy, but they've lost somebody, and it's all about trying to retrace. It's the same film, sequelized, right? This time they're in Bangkok rather than in Las Vegas. We knew all that already. We knew it was going to be pretty much the same thing. And the trailer is actually quite amusing. There's some amusing moments in it. There's some groaning moments, and everything else was fine. The trailer was supposed to be attached to source code in the United States this week and going out into cinemas this week. A very cryptic note showed up at the cinemas in America from the MPA / Warner Brothers saying to remove the trailer and destroy it immediately. No replacement trailer was being given. And they won't say why. Now, I have the trailer here, and we're going to watch it, because I want to know why. And when Warner Bros. Was asked why the trailer has been removed from circulation, they said no comment. So here is the trailer for The Hangover Part 2 that has been asked to be removed and destroyed from prints. Let's see if we can watch it and figure out why. I think I have a hypothesis. And all I can say is my hypothesis is based on we live in a completely PC stupid world. Now, with that in note, watch this.
Can we get much higher? Hey, everybody, here are some fun facts. The population in Thailand is 63 million people. It is twice the size of Wyoming. None of you know Stu like I do. I can't even tell you what we've been through because we made a pact. What I can tell you is this. This is not Stu's first marriage. There was a whore in Las Vegas a couple of years
ago. Time's up. Sit down, bud.
Come have a drink with me and the guys.
Go and do me a favor. Take my little brother Teddy with you.
That is a great idea. Bring the kid.
All right, one drink.
You did it, buddy.
Sure did.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
What the hell? I wanna see
you at the moment. Oh, your hair is gone.
No.
Oh.
Phil, I'm scared.
Stu, come on, get up. We gotta situate.
Holy.
Where are we?
You're gonna freak out, but it's gonna be okay.
What's, is it my teeth?
This is a real tattoo!
Alan, what did you do? Did you roofie me?
I didn't do anything.
No! Ah! Oh, jeez!
Ah! It's a monkey!
Where are you guys?
I don't know. We woke up in some city.
Is Teddy with you?
They've been looking for him all morning.
I can't believe this is happening again.
It's Laura's little brother. He's lost. We're not going back without Teddy.
We love to party.
All I wanted was a bachelor brunch.
Chow?
What are you doing here?
Buddy's my plus one.
We had a sick night, bitches. Whoa.
Check your pockets.
There might be clues.
Chiang Mai Monastery.
I don't remember any of this.
What is this, a P.F. Chang's?
Where the hell are you?
We're in Bangkok.
Hala, idiot squala.
Pull that monkey in!
He's so strong!
Hold on, dead boy!
Oh, my word! What is going on?
Hey, guys, check it out. Alan,
cut it out.
When a monkey nibbles on a weenus, it's funny in any language.
Ah, fuck it, I'll watch it.
Yeah, I'll watch it too. But the point is, why was that trailer pulled? And I think I know why. My suspicion is, and this is going to sound really stupid to people who have open minds, but my opinion is it's that one line in that film where he says, hold on, gay boys. Because remember the dilemma. Six months ago, remember the controversy when he said the gay little car?
Yeah.
And they had to pull that trailer and recut the trailer. The line appears in the film, but they had to cut it out of the trailer.
They had to cut out of the trailer in the first film?
No, this is in The Dilemma. Remember the movie The Dilemma? Vince Vaughn says his gay little car.
Was it the same company?
I don't think so.
Yeah, because it's the same. It is the kind of shit that would end up fucking getting pulled. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's not. I figured there might have been some racial insensitivity.
See, I mean, look at this. Look at this. In our chat room, Delta Knight has said, he said gay boys, and the word gay has been censored in our chat room.
Yeah.
So the automatic filter has even censored the word gay. I reckon it's the word gay.
Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you, man. It's a possibility. I think it's kind of sad, but yeah, no. Look,
have we become that politically correct? That yeah. Oh man, it's either that or it's the monkey gnawing on his penis at the end.
I don't know, because they got away with the wanking thing with the baby. Yeah, what's the difference? But or either that or like the maybe animal cruelty. I mean, you could pick any one of these.
So anyway, so it's up for debate. Why was this trailer banned? I don't know. It actually kind of looks some music.
I mean, that's the whole thing. The first one was shit, but look, I mean, it was funny. And
it's about the funny, that's why we see it.
It's the whole thing that attracts me to any of those sort of comedies. It's like the party back in the day and all that sort of stuff.
Birthday num nums.
It's insensitive. The reason that we watch films like this is because it's everything we find in everything that we. That we don't get, usually. It's every cheekiness, it's every wrongness.
Hope Todd Phillips can return to the original Hangover, because his last film was offensively unfunny, which was Due Date.
Mm.
So I'm really hoping he can kind of go back to the sense of the Hangover, yeah. rather than try and make the Hangover into... Because Due Date was awful.
Yeah.
You know? Anyway, we are running over, so we're going to...
Oh, no, the gay...
Oh, hold on. So what did you say before?
Yeah.
He said something, okay. Boys, and it's actually been auto-censored. Can you phonetically spell it out or something?
Hold up. I'll try writing it in. We'll find out.
Okay.
Is that censored for people?
No, that's coming through on me.
Oh, there you go. Well, I don't know what he
said. So, Delta, can you... If you go back to 337 in the chat room, you'll see you typed in, he said something, boys.
Oh, no, he said gay boys.
And you said gay boys. And yet, maybe it's the combination of gay and boys.
Well, I wrote gay boys, so.
Oh, you did too. Oh, this is weird, man.
Cruelty to roast pigs.
All right.
I don't know what the answer is to this, but...
I don't either. Look, I'm sure at some stage somebody will come out with a statement, but the fact that it was a co-MPAA / Warner Brothers decision to do this...
Maybe it was something we didn't see. Like, it might be one of those things where it's just something where no one was aware of it, and somebody that has been working on this trailer turns around and just goes... Like, maybe there is something legitimately worrying in that trailer. To have it pulled by both Warner Brothers and them is the kind of thing, if you come to a joint decision, especially when you've got a trailer that, look, I got to say, is that good. Like, that trailer is well put together. And it's like, even someone like me that saw the original teaser and went, eh.
It could be something as stupid as something written on a street sign in Thai that we can't read.
Exactly. Look, there may just be something like that. And if so, I hope they fix it and throw it back out, because truth is, that is actually kind of a good trailer.
That's so funny. And look, and the point is, that trailer is everywhere online.
Yeah.
I did notice, though, that the link that I have in the show notes is now broken. Pulled. I'll check, because we have that embedded on Geek Actually. I'll check to see if ours has been pulled.
Yeah.
Because that would be bad if it's been pulled.
Yeah.
So we'll see if we can keep that link alive. If it does get killed, I will actually keep looking for a fresh one.
Mm.
It is around. It's got to be around on people's servers. Yeah. So we'll keep our eyes open on that and make sure that we keep a live link to that. Josh is just checking it out
now. No, it's still up on YouTube.
All right, so YouTube, the one that we are linked to on YouTube seems to still be working. So that's good. All right, we'll keep our eye on that. If you find that link breaks...
It still works. Just checked it then. So yeah.
Great. If you go to geekactually.com and you're trying to play the Hangover 2 trailer and you find it's broken, send me an email, feedback@geekactually.com. We'll find a fresh version and we'll keep that link alive. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Our list of five this week is... five post-credit scenes worth waiting for. Now, a post-credit scene is one of those little tiny scenes tagged at the end of the credits, so you've sat through the whole credit sequence and suddenly it comes back on and there's a scene.
Yeah.
Now, there are lots of these where you sit there and go, really, what was the point in that?
Yeah.
But every now and again, some of those post-credit sequences are actually quite funny or quite informative, or they give you that last little sting in the tail, which gives you something to watch. And so we've come up with a list of five that we think are worth hanging around for. All right. Josh, what's your number five?
Number five is from the film Pool Hall Junkies.
Yeah, which is, I haven't seen.
Yeah, which is, it's not the best scene in the world or anything like that. I just find it quite amusing because the rest of the film is kind of very, very much about pool and hall and stuff like that. And you come back to the scene, which doesn't really make any sense because they're all talking about money and getting money together and they're standing back onto a woman and you can't quite figure out what's going on and they're all getting as much cash as they can together. And it ends up just being them trying to figure out whether or not they're real or not. And... copper feel. Just really, really out of you know, everywhere, and it is quite a serious film. Yep. So it's like to get that at the end, it was kind of amusing. It's cute.
Cool. My number five is from Zombieland. And it's the very end of the film. There is a little improvised sequence between Tallahassee and Bill Murray, which looks like it's an outtake, but it's kind of like the last, getting the last lines out in the scene. And it is actually really funny.
Yeah.
And is well worth sticking around for. And as I say, it looks like it's just outtake impro riffing, but very funny stuff and well worth hanging around for at the end. Your number four?
My number four is from Rush Hour. The original Rush Hour, the outtakes of them just fooling around.
I love
and,
outtakes.
Exactly. And Jackie Chang just being, you know, Jackie Chang, and the language differences and the barriers between the two of them, just balls to the wall funny. Like, I mean, the movie, the first movie is really fun, and the outtakes are just like piss funny.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
My number four is from Constantine. There's a scene right at the end of the film where if you feel like you just want to have that little bit of resolution on the Chaz story, his sidekick who gets killed, there's a scene at the very end. This is spoilers for all these films, by the way, just to pre-warn you. There's a scene right at the very end of the credits which actually shows Constantine go and put his lighter on Chaz's gravestone. And as he turns to walk away, Chaz bursts forth from the grave as an angel and then takes off into the sky. Yeah. And Constantine has a little smile on his face knowing that Chaz is going to be okay.
Yeah.
And it's actually a really, really well done scene. You sit there and go, that's a lot of money in special effects invested in a post-credit sequence. Yeah, so.
Exactly.
Okay, you're number three.
My number three is from Hellboy, which I just love, which is the scene where the dude who you hate for the first three quarters of the film and then him and... Hellboy have that bonding sequence. Tom, who's the old bald guy, they have the bonding sequence over the cigars. You get to see that he's still alive and running around in the catacombs, which was just really cute. I thought that was funny.
Number three is old school, going back to the 80s. It's Young Sherlock Holmes, the Steven Spielberg produced film. There's a scene right at the very end of the film where, after all is said and done, the credits roll with a horse-drawn carriage going, and you follow this horse-drawn carriage all the way through the credits, and as the credits finish, the guy who was the bad guy throughout this entire film who has escaped walks into a hotel, books a room for the night, and signs Moriarty.
Yeah.
And you just go, there's the sequel that never happened.
Yeah.
So it was a pity that sequel never happened. I really enjoyed Young Sherlock Holmes. Your number two.
My number two is the same as... Oh, no, sorry. No. My number two is Because of Its Power, which was at the end of Iron Man 2, the ginormous wink to camera, which was the Thor hammer, and we all just kind of went... Yes.
And I will double up on you and say that my number two is actually the giant wink to camera, which was the end of Iron Man 1, which was where he comes home and Nick Fury is standing in the room and says, I want to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative.
Yeah. But to me, like, that wasn't a big enough wink because it was kind of like it could just be like, you know, them just being like, there you go.
Yeah, but I remember going back to when Iron Man came out, because I agree with you about Iron Man 2. That's also really good. I love the hammer sitting
well,
there.
Well, it was Nick Fury was great for me, and it was really cool to see that and kind of be like, maybe you're going that way with it. But that was the first time we saw it starting. Like,
that makes sense.
That was the power to it, was just the fact that you were like, this shit is going to
happen. Actually, we should go back and actually say that all of the Marvel-produced films, and when we say Marvel-produced, this gets a bit complicated. The X-Men films, Spider-Man, Daredevil, Ghost Rider,
Sony.
Fantastic Four are Fox or Sony, and they are not actually Marvel productions. They are licensed from Marvel.
Yeah.
The Marvel-produced films are Iron Man, the new Incredible Hulk film, the upcoming Iron Man 2, the upcoming Thor, the upcoming Captain America, and, of course, the Avengers, which is coming out. And these are actually produced, and they're the ones who are creating this continuity around their world. And each one of these has a nod or a wink to the next film. So in Iron Man 1, you've got Nick Fury saying, we want to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative. In Iron Man 2, in the Incredible Hulk, we had Stark come and talk to the general saying, let's talk about the... Avengers Initiative, Iron Man 2, we've got the Thor hammer. It's like each one has that next nod to the next film. So, of course, Thor will have a nod to Captain America.
Yep.
Captain America will have a nod to the Avengers. In fact, I think it's not spoilers to say that Captain America, because we don't know, but my belief is Captain America will end with him being frozen, which will lead directly into the Avengers. So it won't even need a post-credit sequence. Yeah. But I think the Marvel has been very clever with everything that they've been doing. I remember how excited the geeks got when they found out that Samuel L. Jackson was going to be doing Fury.
Yeah.
So both the Iron Man films, I think, is what our consensus is. Both Iron Man films have good tags at the end.
Would.
Number one, looking over at your list, is the same as my number one.
And it is the best post-credit sequence.
It is the best post-credit sequence ever put on film, and makes you feel about this small in the cinema. And that, of course, is from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
At the very end, when all is said and done, the credits finish, screen goes to black, and then comes back up again, and Ferris comes walking out of his hallway and just looks at this camera, walks up the screen, looking straight at you, and goes, "You're still here? It's over. Go home." And I just thought, that is so good. That is so clever. And all I could think was, sitting there in the cinema, because I watch films to the end, the cinema was empty. So he's talking directly to me. You know? That's like, I'm just thinking, I'm sorry. So I wholeheartedly agree with Josh. Our number ones are the same.
Yeah.
And that is where a post-credit sequence is well worth the wait, because it gave us that one gem of a moment, which is just as entertaining as anything that took place in the film.
Yeah, and it was a good final.
And it was a great final. Yeah, absolutely great final moment to that film. Now, where's my show notes gone? All right, we're done. Let's wrap this puppy
Go
up.
Go home.
We're done. Go home. Let's wrap this puppy up and say, if you agree or disagree with anything we have to say, send your feedback to feedback@geekactually.com or drop us a voicemail at 02-8011-3167 or our Skype ID is geekactually, all one word, in case you're cheap. Okay? Get your merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, do any of those wonderful things, follow our Tumblr accounts, do anything, go to geekactually.com. There is a follow us link. Click on there. Whole list of stuff comes up. You can also follow, of course, my son at youtube.com/Nicky McVeigh, all one word, and you can see his great animated short films there as well. For tech, general geekery, and just kind of an all-around good time, really, and mice in cans, you can listen to Geek Actually, which we record directly before this show and is on iTunes. Just search for Geek Actually, or you can find all the episodes on geekactually.com. Watch us record this show, as we said, live every Saturday. We start our recording day about 12 p.m. ish. Film actually generally starts around the 2 p.m. ish mark. Sometimes it's a little bit later, sometimes a little bit earlier. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Sorry, we're still getting used to this. UTC plus 10, geekactually.com/live. And Josh, I believe you have another show.
RawDLC.com is the website to go to. You can go over there to check out anything that is gaming based. And don't forget to check out our live show, which is Tuesdays at 8 p.m.
Cool. And we also have our friends Real Junkies. You can find them on iTunes under Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, or you can find them on their own website, weekendronan.com. And that's, they do another film podcast like us, but they drink tequila and they just give their honest opinion on films. And I really love those boys and keep up the good work. Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, Rachel and Lewis, I should say, over at the Funky Film Show, Thursdays on Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM, or you can catch up with later episodes, radiofremantle.com. Go check them out. They're always good fun, and we often disagree on films with them, but that's what the joy of it all is. And our cover art, our artwork, our lovely cartoons that you see on our website and on our cover art for our iTunes stuff, you can find that. That's all created by Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com, and I believe he's out at the Easter Royal Easter Show this coming week. Is it this week, next week, whenever it is? Over this period, Easter period, when the Royal Easter Show is, he's doing caricatures out there, so you can find him out there doing
stuff.
There you
go. Awesome.
So you should go check him out. Now, we are finishing the show today. One last thing. I mentioned this on Geek Actually. I should mention it here as well. Little Geek, we've talked about this, so he knows. It's not a big surprise. We're talking to him about getting him an iPod Touch. And I just thought we'd just throw this out here because we wanted to give him an iPod Touch, but he really wants an iPad. We can't really afford it, but we are willing to put up the money for the iPod Touch. And then what we're trying to do is try and get some donations up from people, hopefully to help make up the difference in price. It's on geekactually.com. There's a little panel that says donate, get Little Geek an iPad. Anything you can do to help would be great. And if you donate, we'll put you on the birthday card as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if we do manage to round all this up, Little Geek will come on the show and show off his new iPad 2 and make us both jealous because he'll have an iPad 2 and we will have an iPad 1.
I have a $1,000 computer. I don't need an iPad anymore.
Yeah, well, I've got a new MacBook Pro. What do I know? I want a new iPad. All right. Anyway, we're going to finish that up. So, as I say, if you feel like helping out with the with his birthday present, his birthday's in June, so we've got a little bit of time. We thought we'd start it early. Mm-hmm. It's right there on the front page of geekactually.com. Today we are going out, as long as the board behaves itself and everything works the way it's meant to work, which, you know, is often not. But today we are going to go out with a track from the Sucker Punch soundtrack. Josh is going to take his headphones off now because he doesn't want to hear it. This is Sweet Dreams Are Made of This by Emily Browning, originally done by the Eurythmics, of course, but this is the version from the film. So we're going to go out with this over our credits and say, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies, but possibly not Sucker Punch.
Later.
See you later, guys.